This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
This is your current affairs program, The Rainbow Report on Joy 94.9.
And good evening, this is Doug Pollard welcoming you to another magazine of news and current affairs for The Rainbow Crew. Well, it's hay fever season, cold and flu season, as you can probably tell from my voice, and it's election season. Well, they say bad things come in threes. One good thing, Barack Obama has just been elected President of the USA, so que sera has donned a bonnet trimmed with blue this week and is looking under it for some reflections on this historic victory. But just as America was saying, yes, we can, and we have a very evocative soundbite from Eric Williams, our correspondent in Harlem, New York, about that, Arizona, Florida and California were telling us, no, you can't, by passing gay marriage bans. We'll have a few words about that, too. That's the whole story about Proposition 8. I find it very hard not to say Preparation H when that ever comes up. Meanwhile, here in Melbourne, letterboxes are filling up with council election material. Peel proprietor Tom McFeely, who had such a fun time with his local council over noise from his pub, has decided to jump the fence, so to speak, a dangerous pursuit if he's wearing his kilt at the time, and standing for election in the city of Yarra. And another of the would-be Melbourne City mayoral teams will be joining us tonight as well. Catherine Ng, and I apologise if that's not the way her name is pronounced, a long-time supporter of John So, is making a tilt at the job. We'll be talking to her and her deputy later in the programme. With me in the studio tonight, my regular guests. It's a regular bunch of people from Evolution Publishing tonight. Richard Watts of Canvas and Andrew Shaw from MCV with their take on what's going on in the queer world. And in just a moment, our first guest of the evening, Rodney Croom from Tasmanian Gay and Lesbian Rights Group and Australian Coalition for Equality. Final evidence in the Tasmanian gay blood donation ban case was presented on Friday. And Rodney, you called it crucial evidence. Why was that?
It was crucial evidence because we finally got to the nub of this issue after weeks and weeks of debating whether kissing is sex and and how much risk attaches to anal sex, all this kind of stuff. We finally got to the issue of whether there are some gay men who are currently banned from giving blood donation who are at less risk of acquiring HIV than some heterosexuals who can give blood. And the evidence that was given by Professor John Calder showed that there was a rough equivalent there amongst some of those people, between those groups. And then when we factored in some of the statistics that came from the experts that are appearing for Michael Caine, on our side that is, then we found that in fact the risk was much lower for some gay men. Gay men who practice safe sex, particularly in monogamous relationships, at a much lower risk of acquiring and passing on HIV than heterosexuals who, you know, sleep around and don't have safe sex, but who are allowed to give blood. Now, of course, you could say, well, that's pretty obvious.
I was going to say.
Intuitively, it is quite obvious.
Intuitively, would have thought so, yes.
Yeah, but it needed to be shown by the mathematical modelling. It needed to be shown by the studies that are available. And finally, on the final day of evidence, it was shown, I think. And I really feel that that was an important step forward for our case.
Right. So basically what we're saying is there's really not that much difference between, you know, your sexuality really doesn't come into it. It's your behaviour. And this, you feel this evidence has now finally proved that.
Yes, basically. What the evidence showed is that there, like I said before, some gay men who are excluded from blood donation are at less risk than some heterosexuals who can give blood. I mean, that is, like I said before, the nub of the issue. Now that we've been able to show that, hopefully we can, you know, persuade the tribunal to support changing the donor screening process.
But hasn't there just been a similar case, I think, in Scotland, where the blood service up there is still sticking to the story that regardless of whether you have safe sex or not, it's still riskier if you're a gay man and therefore they don't want you to donate? I mean, how are they managing to hang on to this idea in the face of the evidence?
Well, Most of the blood donation services in the Western world hold on to this idea. And to be honest, I don't think it's because... I think it's because they haven't really investigated the issue to the depth that we have here. In the Scottish situation, petitions and evidence have been presented to a parliamentary committee of the Scottish Parliament. And, of course, the blood donation service in Scotland, as it does in Australia, says that gay men are too risky, we can't allow them to donate. But really, the fact is that nowhere in the world, including in Scotland, has as much epidemiological evidence and thought and modelling been brought to bear on the issue as it has in Tasmania. You can see that from the amount of material that's been presented to the tribunal. I mean, there are literally thousands, we're getting up in tens of thousands of pages of material. And once we distill that, we get to the position I was talking about before. In the investigations which have occurred in other places, we haven't really got to that level of empirical insight yet.
Okay, Richard Watts.
Rodney, a question for you. You mentioned the word modelling. Is one of the sticking points the fact that while there's been significant research into the safe sex practices of gay men, that that kind of detailed modelling and research into heterosexual men is not available and therefore can't be presented to the tribunal?
That is one issue, but probably more of an issue, Richard, is that so much of the research that's been done and the modelling has focused on high-risk men who have sex with men, for the obvious reason that the researchers want to know what creates risk in order to be able to try and prevent it. Very little research has been focused on men who have safe sex, particularly in monogamous relationships, to quote... to paraphrase Professor Anne Mitchell when she was giving evidence, men who live fairly mundane lives in the suburbs, very little attention has been focused on them because they're not at high risk. And so when it came to assessing what risk they were at, we had to scrape together as much of the little evidence of there is as possible and then factored into the mathematical modelling in a way that the Red Cross in Australia really doesn't want to do and hasn't been done up until now. And it took epidemiologists from the United States who are working to support Michael Caine in his case to actually do that for us. It was very hard for us to find epidemiologists in Australia who were willing to do that, which was a great shame. The Red Cross in Australia it's not really open to these kinds of ideas, and anyone who really wants to work for the Red Cross or has any association with the Red Cross has been really unwilling to do this work as well. We had to go to America to have it done.
Andrew Shaw.
Rodney, it's Andrew. I was reading about that Scottish case, and I think that gay men in the list of prohibited acts, gay women were right up there with people who'd had sex with prostitutes in sub-Saharan Africa, intravenous drug users, and people who had experiences or lifestyles which deliberately exposed themselves or increased the risk of being exposed to HIV. Isn't this just a plain case of discrimination against gay men, the assumption being that gay men have more riskier sex overall than, say, straight men do?
Yes, it is simply a case of stereotyping. One of the concepts that's been introduced into the case here in Tasmania is the concept of disaggregation, which is another way of talking about distinguishing between gay men who are at high risk of HIV and those who are at low risk. And what we do when we disaggregate the population of gay and bisexual men who are sexually active, we find that the risk varies so greatly that it really makes no sense to generalise in the way that the Red Cross at the moment is doing. Because the risk, the variation, the range in risk is so great. All the Red Cross does when it sees gay people, gay men, is see high risk. What we've been saying is, no, that makes no sense. There's a huge population of gay men who are at very low risk. You need to be disaggregating. And that's another way, slightly more sort of clinical way of saying stop stereotyping.
Yeah. Do you think this is actually going to get anywhere? I mean, do you think they are going to be told to do anything differently? Is there going to be how does it look to you?
It would be very unwise of me to try and predict the mind of the tribunal. Like I said, it has a heap of material in front of it. The finding will take, its decision-making process will take 6 to 18 months.
Good Lord.
And it has a whole lot of considerations before it that I'm not an expert in, including the legal ones.
So we've got a long wait before we hear any kind of outcome on this one.
It'll be a very long wait.
Okay.
What I'm hoping is that the material that we've collected in Tasmania, and like the expert material I was talking about before, that it can be brought to bear on some of the initiatives that are occurring in other places like Scotland. I mean, we've already been in touch with the Scots and sent them quite a bit of material we have, and hopefully we can
do that. So they don't have to reinvent the wheel, basically.
No.
Okay.
Exactly.
Now, before I let you go, because we're going to have to move on very shortly, good news in America, bad news in America. Good news that we've got Barack Obama, but not such good news on Proposition 8 and the other gay marriage bans.
Now, of course, there's a connection between those two, a very clear one. It's clear from the polling in, or the exit polls in California, that one of the reasons Proposition 8 got up was that Barack Obama brought out so many black evangelical Christians to support him. But, well, of course, once they got to the polling booths, they also voted against same-sex marriage.
Yes, and of course he hasn't been very pro-same-sex marriage himself, has he?
No. Well, he's against same-sex marriage. He was against Proposition 8 as well, but not nearly as vocally, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's wonderful that Barack Obama's got up, and particularly that he mentioned gay people in his acceptance speech. That was wonderful. But the downside is that America seems still not ready to vote for same-sex marriage, even in the most liberal state. Obviously, there's a lot of community education work still to be done there.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for that, Rodney. I'm going to hold off on discussion about the US election and gay marriage bans until later there in the show, because we've got more input on that later on. But for the time being, thanks very much for your time tonight, Rodney.
Thanks. Thanks, Doug.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9.
Now, I'd like to welcome a new guest to the studio now. Not exactly a Rainbow Report virgin, or any other kind of that. We've got Tom McFeely, the proprietor of the Peel Hotel. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Better for hearing your lovely Scottish voice again.
Oh, blush.
Are you going to be making inspiring speeches on the stump when it comes to standing for the council in the city of Yarra?
I don't know about inspiring, but yeah, I'll be making lots of speeches.
Why have you decided to stand?
Frustration, basically.
Uh-huh.
Absolute frustration with the current council, that, as a ratepayer and as a resident. I'm frustrated.
Yeah, well, you had a fair bit of problem with them one way and another, didn't you? Over licence, over noise, over all sorts of things. What's the root cause behind all of that?
Oh, look, I mean, but the Peel had issues with council, but that's absolutely not why I'm standing. I'm standing on, you know, as I say, as a resident, I've got issues with traffic, bike riders, the tunnel, parking. I've got issues basically with everything apart from the Peel. And I found it quite hypocritical sitting in the car 2 weeks ago, bitching in the car, mm-hmm. and whinging to some other people about what I'm annoyed about. And then I thought, well, to hell with it, try and do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was giving my friend Dale a lift over to Fitzroy Town Hall. He was going over to nominate himself as a candidate.
That's Dale Smedley
from DTs.
Yes.
And I thought, you know what, give me a form too. And it started from there, literally.
Richard.
Tom, it seems a bit of a spur-of-the-moment decision, as you've just described, the decision to register and to stand for election in the city of Yarra. That would suggest then that your policies haven't been clearly articulated and planned before they've been presented. They've only been developed after your registration. Would that be a fair summation?
Yes. So certainly my views and the policies I've held for quite some time. But as policies themselves, they have only been basically... I still don't even have a proper flyer as yet. My viewpoint on some of the issues I've always had. I just haven't espoused them to date.
Realistically, what do you think your chances are of being successful in
this
stance?
As the only independent candidate, and we never thought that would actually happen in the language ward, but I'm the only independent candidate, I think that alone increases my chances considerably. I think some of the issues perhaps controversial, but at least it highlights them. I think my chances are pretty high.
Whereabouts are you standing? This is Langridge Ward. Langridge. Now, what area does that cover?
That covers Collingwood, Fitzroy, North Fitzroy, Fairfield, Alphington, Abbotsford.
And we should point out, before people get dismayed and have to choose between two pubs, that you're actually in a different ward to Dale. So
that's right.
There's no. Yeah. Well, how do your policies stand up next to his? You have a very similar take on things.
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
Dale's got different opinions from me, but he's representing a different ward, and they have different issues. As I say, I believe that the platform I'm standing on. It is quite controversial, particularly when it comes to things like bike permits and.
Yeah, I was just reading this little report on your. You say that you think the council's overspending on bicycle lanes, and you want them abolished on main traffic routes and replace them with motorbike lanes.
Tom, yes. I ride a bike, and I have to ask you, what do you have against people like me?
Nothing at all. Nothing? In particular, I just think it could be better managed. I do think if anyone's going to ride, I mean, a bike in Yarra, I think there should be a permit, which would also help cover insurance, some insurance issues. If you drive through Yarra, or even if you ride through Yarra, you'll see bike lanes appearing everywhere. Now, even in some streets where you've got a car park, a bike lane, a car park, and there's not a lane for traffic, it just hasn't been thought through. I'm all for more bike riding. But it just could be better managed. To wave the flag and say, oh, yeah, more bikes without thinking about it is wrong.
And isn't this something really that needs coordinating across the whole city, though, rather than happening kind of city by city or whole of the conurbation?
Doug, I quite agree. I think managing traffic flow and managing bikes probably should be better handled by the state. They haven't done it properly to date, and that's mostly why I'm standing. Just to highlight a lot of these issues.
One of the policies I know that you put forward in the story that we ran was abolishing drinking in public places. Yeah. Now, this is an issue that has been brought up time and time again, especially in Smith Street area, and you're just down the bottom there. Can you just elaborate on that and why you think that would be a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, most residents, I think, in any municipality don't like the thought of public drinking. At every meeting I've had with council, as an individual from the appeal or sitting at the licensing forum, every publican wants public drinking banned. The residents want it banned. The police want it banned. But the council continuously, on a unanimous basis, vote to not enable Local 08, which would ban public drinking. At the moment, if some youngsters want to sit in a park with a cask of wine, if they're not causing trouble, the police can't do anything about this. And it's quite frustrating for them. So, ban public drinking.
Tied in with that policy, Tom, you've also said you'd like to reduce the opening hours of bottle shops in the area. Now, the cynical might see that as a means simply to channel people into your venue.
No, not at all. As I say, this is the furthest thing from the appeal. It's nothing to do with appeal. If we remember the 2 a.m. lockout, how ridiculous was it that bottle shops on Chapel Street could still trade 24 hours that people can go into a venue? Most of the trouble happens in streets. If people can go to a bottle shop and get a slab of beer, it's what can I say?
And you were sort of instrumental in bringing getting. You were one of the first people to get the first what do you call it, exemption from that lockout, weren't you?
Yeah,
yeah. In effect, it had no teeth at all.
No teeth at all, and all it didn't help business whatsoever. again, yet another schmozzle by the state government, frankly.
Now, given that you're running as an independent, Tom, have you initiated discussion with other parties, the Greens, for example? Because I can see that there could be, I don't know, some conflict between your policies regarding cycling and the Greens' focus on reducing the number of cars on roads and focusing on more environmentally friendly methods of transport.
I haven't initiated any dialogue. What I found very interesting is once the nominations were in and it was apparent I was only independent candidate, everyone else initiated dialogue with me in relation to preferences. I then asked the various parties, or the two parties, Labour and the Greens, if ideology was going to be an issue. And I was informed that no, it wasn't. It's all about getting votes. Mm-hmm. I was quite disappointed with that attitude, to be honest, and that inspired me even more to put more effort into standing and being an independent.
Well, the best of luck with it, Tom.
Thank you very much.
We'll see how we go. This is turning out to be a very gay set of elections we're having at the moment, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think it's good that people, you know, stand up and decide, even if it is a spur-of-the-moment thing like you, you know. I'm not going to sit and whinge in my car and I'm going to actually stand for election and do something about it. Yeah. And if my partner's listening at home, no, that doesn't mean I'm signing up for the council in Eltham. You can relax.
Thank you. And I would like to see if anyone would like to check out some of my issues, please go to www.changeyarra.net.au.
changeyarra.net.au. Okay, thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Now, in a short while, we'll be talking to another of the candidates for the Mayor of Melbourne, Catherine Ng, and her deputy, Terry Makings.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au.
Informing, entertaining and provoking. This is the Rainbow Report.
Now something of a little departure for the Rainbow Report. Well, they do say you can't be a gay man of a certain age without being a fan of Broadway musicals. I know I am. And if you are, you'll be a regular listener to that programme. It's Joy's flagship show tunes programme. And they're about to celebrate their 150th, that's 150 shows, he's not 150 years old, with a megastar event right here on Joy's rooftop. And on the line now are the hosts, Will Conyers and EJ.
Hello,
darlings. How are you tonight?
Look, I feel most apolitical. That was my dog.
Congratulations on reaching your 150th and still singing.
Thank you.
I feel very honoured to be on this programme. I'm stuck for words, which is quite unusual.
I was going to say, that's not usually you at all, is it?
I'm feeling really excited. We're only a few days away from a huge event on the Joy rooftop, and it's going to be quite amazing.
Well, right, bear time. It's 150 shows, which is almost 3 years, and we've done it with uninterrupted broadcasting, like you do, Doug.
I have had the occasional holiday.
we have the occasional nights off too, but usually it's one of us gallivanting around and somebody else
going to the hospital
over.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is that too. But yeah, look, we've got a lot of great friends on the show that we've made over the almost 3 years of broadcasting on Joy, and it's a wonderful thing when you have a community of performers that actually get behind a show that's designed to, you know, bring them to a wider community, and you know, they've really been supportive of everything we've done on Broadway at Bedtime.
Yeah, that's been the really lovely thing, Doug, is that the phone calls have been unanimously, yes, you guys have done so much for us, let's do something for you. It's just been that part of it's been really great.
Listen, if anybody wants to find out any more about it, they can go to our website, which is broadwayatbedtime.com.
And Doug,
yeah.
Listen, chapeau to you for the wonderful work you do with the Rainbow Report. I mean, it really is. You use the word flagship about Broadway at Bedtime, but truly, you know, Rainbow Report is a world-class program.
Well, isn't that lovely? Thank you very much indeed, Will. We'll have to have you back on again.
That was my intention.
Now we know why you've got such a full phone book. Flattery will get you everywhere with me, Will. All right. Thank you, Will. Thank you, PJ.
Thank you, for teeing all this up.
Have a wonderful, wonderful night.
We will.
Okay. That was Will Conyers and PJ from Broadway at Bedtime. That is going to be something of an amazing evening, I would think.
If you're a show tunes fan, which I confess I'm not.
Well,
so,
there have not been that many punk rock musicals, I don't think, have there?
Oh, there's been a couple, but...
name one.
Well, I think you could call Hedwig and the Angry Inch a bit of a punk rock drag musical.
Punk rock drag, yes.
Tommy, okay. Tommy, sort of a, well, not punk. Not punk, glam. Glam rock musical.
Glam rock? I don't know if who were glam rock. Do you? We could get into some very complicated things here. We've had a couple of messages here. Come on, guys, tighter questions. You let Tom off easy with broad and sweeping answers.
A bit difficult to pin him down when his kind of policies aren't fully articulated yet.
Well, yes, but he goes on to add in a second message, still love you, though. So, thanks very much indeed. Well, we're hoping to be a little more uptight and on the ball with my next guest. That's Catherine Ng and her deputy, Terry Makings, who will be up with us in just a moment.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Keeping the GLBTI community up to date, this is The Rainbow Report.
Yes, and you're listening to The Rainbow Report with Doug Pollard and guests. We have Richard Watts and Andrew Shaw, the Evolution crew, in with us tonight to give me a hand. And joining us now, we have mayoral candidate Catherine Ng and her deputy, Terry Makings. Now, Catherine was part of John So's ticket previously, but now she's struck out on her own, I think it's fair to say. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Welcome. Thank you.
Now, what are you going to be bringing to the town hall as mayor that you haven't done already as a councillor?
Well, I think number one is I'm able to actually drive the policies and key initiatives from the Lord Mayor's office. There are four major key platforms. The first one is clean up the city, and the second policy is platform is care for communities, create opportunities, and control cost. So my four C's, progressive policies, this is what I'm going to do for Melbourne.
Right. So you're not running on any kind of party platform or with party backing. You're an independent in that sense.
Truly independent. Terry and I are truly independent. No political agenda. Never have been a party, political party member.
Richard.
Terry, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your background. Catherine has had more of a media profile, but for some people you'll be a bit more of an unknown element.
Yes, I'd like to keep it that way, actually. I joined the Navy as a youngster from Geelong, and after 20 years in the Navy, I joined local government, joining the City of Melbourne in 1989. And with all the quantum changes that occurred through the 90s, I saw City of Melbourne go from quite a large organisation to a very trim, taut and terrific organisation. And I just don't think enough Melburnians know how professional the people are in the administration. And one of the things I bring to the leadership team is Catherine's well-versed in the political side of it. And I think I know how the inside ticks. And I think together we can make a difference.
Catherine, a question for you. One of the elements that you said would be part of your policies and your campaign would be the introduction of safe city ambassadors at a cost of 20 ambassadors working in pairs on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturday nights at a cost of $1 million to help revellers. Now, this is something that you're suggesting at a time when council has been $67 million in the red over the last 2 years. Can council afford an initiative like this?
I think a lot of people actually mistaken and don't understand that actually council is actually in absolute good shape in financial in the finance side. We actually maintain our AAA rating, and also we are debt free, so we are not in financial difficulty at all. And all new initiatives introduced by this office would be actually within all the cost parameters.
What would Safe City Ambassadors actually do? Can you explain? I mean, it sounds a bit like a sort of cross between a sort of nanny and a guardian angel kind of idea. What exactly would they be doing?
Well, some people actually describe that as sort of like guardian, but it's actually more like an extension of the City Safe taxi rank, officers, City Safe officers, where they would be actually foot patrolling on the street and just helping people out when they are in need. It's very simple. Like today I saw a lot of people falling on the ground, and after a few more drinks, and these City Safe ambassadors will be saying, ladies, would you like me to organise you a taxi? Or over there, if you, you know, wandering in the city and not sure where to go, and they would say, around the corner, you know, about 50 metres, there would be a city-safe taxi ranks, which you can catch a taxi home. Or at the end, the edge of the city, there are four city night riders services where you can catch the service to go home.
So they're sort of like tour guides for drunk people.
I think I would actually would not describe it like that. It's actually just assisting people in need, and also they will be well trained, i.e. there will be a crowd, you know, congregating outside a certain location, and then there will be the extra eyes and ears for the police and assisting them, almost like CCTV on the ground, real people. They can give people a helping hand, and more than that, then being proactive. Not only they're helping people, at the moment there are issues on the street. For example, there are tagging illegal graffiti, then the people can actually report and back to the administration and say, hey, there is something happening, you know, in the street. There is a faulty light over there. We need to actually record it and get someone out to actually fix it. There is some property damage just around the corner of, you know, managed by the City of Melbourne. Then we can actually report and go and fix it and be proactive about it.
So they would, in a sense, be assisting police, in a sense, with the sort of duties that police at the moment do.
I would not actually say that they are. They would not be doing. They are not a. They do not substitute of police. They would be just helping people out. It works in a city safe taxi rings, helping people out, and it would be just foot patrolling, extra eyes and ears on the street, and keep the city safe and welcoming. Keep the city clean and tidy.
Would you consider putting them, for example, on the night rider buses? Because that's a, you know, that's an area where we've had violence and things popping up in the past. You know, people not feeling safe on those buses, just as they often don't feel safe at the taxi ranks. Would you consider putting them on those buses?
Well, I'll be welcome to, open to any suggestions and ideas. I remember that was one of the things that people love about our tram conductors in the past.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I think is people having extra eyes and ears and having people to say, I need help. Can you help me? I think they are not substitute of police. And I have actually received a media release by, you know, by security companies and saying, fantastic, great ideas, great initiative.
Now, one of the issue obviously that's very, very much on people's minds is to do with public transport, getting in and out of the city, traffic congestion, bicycle paths. We were talking to Tom McFeely about that a little while back. He's standing in the city of Yarra. What can you do about the traffic congestion in the city, for example?
Traffic congestion is a complicated, you know, issue, but at the same time, because primarily is because of our city visitation growth, we actually got about 800,000 people coming to the city every day.
Yep.
So that's why we need to actually have more efficient system, moving the people around, and we are falling behind international world average. The frequency international world average is 2.5 minutes, and we are actually up to 3.5 minutes. So we're just too slow, not frequent enough services, and also the capacity is, you know,
but just... What can you actually do about that as the mayor of the city?
What I would do is push for improvement of the public transport system, and this is one thing that we actually need to negotiate and have the political leadership to actually persuade and get it done. It's not a, we don't have the money to actually, you know,
And you don't have the responsibility for some of these things either.
That's
correct. It's a split responsibility at best, yeah, isn't it, with the state?
But what we could do is what we call sustainable transport mode, that is improve walking and cycling. So these are within our reach. These are the things that we can do, and we are doing it well. We actually have made an application to the Infrastructure Australia to ask for $10 million to actually expedite our bicycle plan, and I think these are the things that we can do and improve the walking and cycling. And we have been doing $5 million every year to improve pedestrian amenity and also cycling path.
Richard, you wanted to come in here.
Yeah, I'm curious to ask about a report from Ernst & Young that was released in 2007 about the City of Melbourne, which described the city management as top-heavy and disjointed, and which also criticised the spending on marketing and events connected with Lord Mayor John So's so-called cult of personality. How do you respond to those suggestions that spending has blown out in areas that it didn't need to, the previous Lord Mayor?
Richard, I think there are myths, there are truths, and actually, as a matter of fact, I was one of the councillors actually championed the internal cost review first, the year before the Ernst and Young people actually came in, because we actually asked for the administration, the executive, to actually do conduct an internal cost review, but it didn't come up with the answers that the councillors were looking for. And from the day that I started as councillor, the top executive has grown. You are absolutely right, from 42 from 97. I spotted it, I raised the issue with the executive, and that's why we did the internal cost review and follow with an independent external review. There were some casualties after the Ernst & Young efficiency review, and there are some people that I think they shouldn't have gone, and there are some people that I think would be making the organisation more efficient, reorganising and realigning.
Just one very quick question for you. You mentioned, you used the phrase clean and tidy to describe your view of the city. Melbourne's graffiti is internationally recognised as a tourist attraction and indeed topped a global poll by Lonely Planet. What's your stance on graffiti?
Well, I love graffiti art when they are legal, meaning like I don't like tagging. There would be zero tolerance on tagging, not on legal graffiti art. And I think graffiti art is an expression of our culture, and I actually has got an arts and cultural background. So I've been trained in fine arts for a couple of years.
Okay, well, we're going to have to leave it there, Catherine, and move on. Thank you very much, Catherine and Terry, for your time tonight. And the best of luck in the election. That was mayoral candidate Catherine Ng and Terry Makings, her deputy.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9.
Now, there's no bigger news this week than the election of President Obama. And Joy was fortunate to actually have a reporter on the spot. Yes, Joy's New York correspondent Eric Williams was in 125th Street in Harlem, the mecca of black America, as the Obama election success was announced. Eric caught up with an old friend, David Cotton, a veteran black activist renowned for twice having climbed to the second-story ledge of City Hall to protest the Mayor Giuliano administration, and his excitement of what had happened was palpable.
Hey, now I bet you don't even know who I am. You don't even remember me.
David Cotton.
Ah, in person.
How you doing, man?
How are you? Good?
Hey, listen, man, mind if I ask you, what is it like tonight, David Cotton?
What is it like?
Yeah,
it's like victory, like sweet victory, years and years. Now when I tell my son, you grow up, you can be president, now it's true. One thing I'm going to say, individuals like this lady here, they set the race. They started it. We just walked in on the end. Now we got to show them some love by bettering ourselves. And to let you know, I worked on the campaign. And you know me, when it comes to that political, you know how I do.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. This is victory. This is sweet here. This means now this is America, y'all. Now this is America. Oh, God, I don't know what to say no more.
Hallelujah.
I don't even know what to say. There it is. Thank you, man. Thank you. Hallelujah. I knocked on plenty doors. I talked to plenty people. Young brothers out here talk about, oh, it ain't going to change nothing. It's all right for you, Dave, because you got a job. The rest of us starving. No, no, no. We all together now. We all done found Martin. This is Martin. I can hear him now. Say again. Say again. Free at last. Free at last. Put that on there.
It was actually quite an interesting piece of sound, Richard.
It was. What has happened in America in the last 24 to 48 hours is quite remarkable in terms of the appointment of an African-American presidential nominee. That is quite groundbreaking and quite remarkable. The flip side of that, as we mentioned earlier, is it looks like Proposition 8 in California, the ban on gay marriage, which has been largely funded by the Mormon Church to the tune of many millions of dollars. Proposition 8 looks like it will get up. But today, three separate court cases were launched to try and fight that particular proposition of banning same-sex marriage.
And they banned marriage as well also in Arizona and
Florida.
Florida
as well, yes.
Now, what about this whole thing that I think Rodney brought it up, that this was caused to some extent by Barack Obama bringing out a huge number of black voters who hadn't voted before, and a lot of them coming from black churches.
Yes, I believe his exit polls showed that 70% of the African-American voters coming out were not supportive of gay marriage, and also the Hispanic community over there.
I was going to say, they're not very fond of us either, are they?
It will be interesting to see what the full results of Prop 8 are. There are still millions of votes that have not actually been counted yet in California, so there could be several developments. An eyewitness that I spoke to, who was at the street party in the Castro last night, talked about the fact that the rainbow flags were flying at half-mast along the Castro Street, and black flags were flying in some places as well, flags of mourning. So while people were out celebrating in the streets, and understandably so, getting rid of the Bush administration and its enormously strong ties to the conservative religious right, that's something to celebrate.
And also, they're not particularly competent, Bush administration, never mind what political angle they were coming from. They just didn't seem to be terribly good at their jobs. I mean, you know, they couldn't run a war. They couldn't run a financial system. You know, we had all this faith-based initiatives for sex education and all that stuff, which I gather, in fact, Obama is also in favour of.
Well, he's been likened sort of to the position that Rudd's taking here, isn't he? He's not going to support gay marriage.
He's in favour of civil unions, he says.
Yes, yes.
Which again brings it back down to state level, rather than taking it up to federal level. I suppose, in a way, he had to do that to get the black vote out, but do you think we'll see him shifting, or is he going to be very... Because he's been very liberal in the past, and he seems to have moved much more to the centre since he's been standing for president.
We will have to wait and see, but I think just the simple fact that, as I think it was Rodney mentioned earlier, in his acceptance speech, Obama talked about Americans black and white, gay and straight, and that is the first time, to my knowledge, that any presidential nominee has acknowledged the gay community in his acceptance speech. That in itself is groundbreaking. We will just have to wait and see what his policies are in real life, as opposed to our conjecture about what his stance will be.
Yeah, it'd be nice to know what Michelle's stance is on this as well, because I suspect she's going to have a considerable influence in this White House, equal to anything Hillary Clinton had in Bill Clinton's day.
I guess in the meantime, we're just going to have to be satisfied with Justice Michael Kirby's famous dog register, which is apparently what he thinks we have at the moment, and he may be right.
Well, that's kind of how I feel about it too. And you know, it's either marriage or nothing for me, I'm afraid. But right now, that's nothing.
Sorry, Doug, I'm not interested.
Yeah, you're in a queue. Anyway, beneath the bonnet of Miss Kay Sara this week, there seethes some political turmoil too. Can she make sense of the loss of her least favourite, Bush? The apotheosis of Obama, the travails of Helen Clark, and tie it all up with a pretty blue ribbon? Oh, yes, she can.
I'm so pleased the land of milk and honey is finally cleaning out the big house. What a shocking state it's been in for the past 8 years. Those bushes have got a lot to answer for. Cobwebs on the chandeliers, lint in the closet, and a thick layer of dust in the Oval Office. You see, George spent little time at his Oval Office desk. Guess he figured things would sort themselves out. Financial crisis. Ha! Here's a blank check. War in Iraq. Ha! How else do you expect us to secure oil supplies? Gay marriage. Ha! Get your grubby hands off our sacred institutions. Okay, I'm paraphrasing. Bush never would have used the word sacred, and I doubt whether he can even spell institution, let alone say it. But he was a difficult child and clearly self-deluded. So much so, he believed he could bend and twist that thing called democracy to his own means. And he nearly got away with it, until that skinny guy with the funny name got up on the podium and called his bluff. Now the skinny guy is president-elect, and George, well, He's packing up his crayons and wondering why it all went so wrong. Closer to home, across the waters, and the land of the long white cloud is also gearing up for a national poll. Helen the Great and her crusty old Labour Party are fighting tooth and nail to hold on to power. And while she does have a mighty fine set of munchers, teeth like that only come along once in a generation, it's unlikely the Kiwi lady will survive this latest test. I, for one, will be sad to see her go. Helen won my heart with her deep voice and sensible shoes and even more sensible hairstyle. One night in a fit of desperation, I called her up and offered to fly over with a hairdryer and a can of Superhold spray and put some height into that lanky do. But she wouldn't have a bar of it, muttering something like, "I haven't got time for such silliness." I forgave her because that very same month she turned up at New Zealand's version of a gay pride picnic. Can you imagine our Kevin Rudd ever doing such a thing? Hardly. Marching down Oxford Street in chaps is simply not his style, and as far as I know, he's yet to respond to Dulcie DeJour's invitation to co-host the Midsummer Dog Show. God wouldn't approve. Well, has anyone ever asked God? Maybe he's sitting up there on his gold lame-covered throne with a chalice of full-bodied red in one hand and a flashing disco scepter in the other, screaming, "Bring it on, sister!" Maybe there's an army of dedicated angels in poor-fitting white sheets jamming along in the background, chanting, "Yes, we can! Yes, we can! Yes, we can!" Maybe that's where the skinny guy with the funny name got it from. I know it's only been a year, but I think we should trade in our Kevin if he doesn't start paying us some respect. It's not a lot to ask. Even the skinny guy mentioned us in his acceptance speech. Come on, Kev, we're hardly asking you to drop the soap in solidarity. A bit of encouragement would be fine. Next time you're explaining the impact of the economic downturn, perhaps you could use the two gay guys down the road as an example. They'd love you for it. And if you need a hand in putting a spin on such controversial issues like gay marriage, I'm only too happy to arrange a counselling session with Helen across the waters. Or even a phone call from the skinny guy with the funny name. But only if you promise to leak the contents of that call to the press. I'm Kay Sarar, and I'm with the skinny guy on the podium. Yes, we can.
What will be, will be. Kay Sarar, Sarar.
Everybody sing along now. And that's it for this week. My thanks to tonight's guest, Kay Sarar, of course, Richard Watts from Canvas Magazine, Andrew Shaw from MCV, mayoral candidate Catherine Ng and her deputy Terry Makings, Peel proprietor and Yarra Council candidate Tong McFeely and the redoubtable Rodney Croom. And thanks also to Eric Williams in New York. And thanks for your messages and calls. And, of course, there's the blog at rainbowreporter.com. Big thanks to my producer, Bianca, and technical producer, Michael. And I'll be back next week with another edition of The Rainbow Report.
This has been a Joy 94.9 News and Current Affairs presentation.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.